Welcome, everyone, to the Vital Conversation. We're so glad you're here, and we're even more excited that you're interested in talking about vitalism. So this conversation is brought to you by the Naturopathic Medicine Institute. The Institute envisions a world where enjoying optimal health allows people to reach their highest potential for inspired creativity. It asserts that the highest ideal in healthcare must act in concert with the healing power of nature. So this little intro here is from Dr. Jim Sensenig, and it speaks to why we're doing what we're doing.
We're doing it because I and many people in the profession are concerned that there is a time-honored way of making sense out of medicine and healing and the role of the physician, and in a way that can result in better outcomes than we see in our culture. And we in the Vitalist School, the people who have the great privilege of, you know, being the progeny, I suppose, of those many thinkers, physicians, male and female, indigenous healers and others who have examined this, we have this beautiful way, this almost seemingly secret way of understanding how this phenomenon works to the benefit of all and to the benefit of those who are in service to others. And we are not capturing that or articulating that as well as we could in our current practices. We all have more to learn. We all have something to build on. And we want to bring that back in a way that it not only doesn't get lost, but that it informs us so that we can be the kind of physicians that we want to be in service to those who need our help. I think that's where we're going. And then on the practical level, we want to talk about it. We want to examine it. We want to unpack it. We want to be able to express these underlying principles so that they're not only understood, but they're understood to be inviolate. And on the most practical level, we need to teach each other how they can be applied to the benefit of the human race and the rest of the world, for that matter.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Vital Conversation, where we have Dr. Jim Sensenig and Dr. Leslie Caesar talking about the ABCs here with Vitalistic Naturopathic Medicine. And with that, I'm going to turn the call over to Dr. Sensenig and Dr. Caesar.
Okay. Thank you very much. And hello, everybody, and welcome again to another one of our Vital Conversations. And today, we are going to really focus on this kind of celebration of the vital force and what that means and how we approach that clinically. My guest today is Dr. Leslie Caesar. As was mentioned, she graduated from Southwest College way back in 2010. She now lives in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago, where she maintains a innovative private practice, which we're going to talk about in a minute, that leverages cutting-edge technology to work with clients all over the United States while maintaining the time-honored principles of vitalistic naturopathic medicine. Her goal with all of her clients is to help them achieve a true transformation in their health and provide them with the knowledge and the skills and the attitudes that they need to continue to care for themselves and maintain their health. Of particular interest to her is the connection between chronic physical pain and the pain, dysfunction, and misalignment within the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of the individual. In addition to the private practice, she volunteers extensively for the Institute. She's currently leading the business and marketing track for associates. She leads a bi-monthly coaching call, as many of you probably know, on business and marketing, specifically for the vitalistic naturopathic physician. And it's clear that that's a passion to hers second only to her passion for the profession and for the basic, shall we say, concepts or foundation of vitalism. Before we go on, I just want to mention that I see now that there are a number of vitalist conferences here and there, and there are some about Nature Cure, and seems like we're having a little bit of an impact on the naturopathic profession by continuing to beat this drum for the basic principles, the basic foundational principles, and the concept of vitalism. So with that, Dr. Caesar, welcome. How are you
today?
Thanks
a lot. Great, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're calling, you know, I asked Dr. Kinley to call this the ABCs of medicine or a clinical medicine, and because of the conversation that you and I had prior to our talking now. And what has led to this conversation on the vital conversation is your observation or your conversation with me that over several times or several vital conversations where I kept talking about the basic philosophical concepts, namely the abnormal composition of the blood and the lymph, the accumulation of wastes and morbid matter and poisons in the system and lowered vitality as being consequences of physical disease or consequences of disease on the physical human entity, according to Lenoir, that concept or those concepts or that idea of those points made a significant difference in the way you thought about medicine and the way you came to practice. And then your conversation with me about how we need, and we have talked about this at the Institute as well, how we want to really elevate that to a significant point in our discussion because it's so important. So can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I was at SC&M from 2006 to 2010, and when I was there, you were still teaching there was like an intensive week before classes started. Came in and Dr. Rick Kirchner came in that first week, and we got 20 hours with you to kind of kick off our naturopathic medical education. And I still remember many of the things that you said in that class. It had a profound impact on me. And I have no doubt, I remember you giving the three legs of the stool on which our medicine stands on, and that is what you just said, right? The abnormal composition of the blood and lymph, accumulation of waste matter, morbid materials, and poisons, and lowered vitality. And that made a lot of sense to me, sitting there in that first week of class and how you laid it out and everything else. And then I diligently went to class, and I never heard anyone mention that again. And so I recall the class, but I had absolutely no training in those three legs of the stool, as you called them, in that class.
Uh-huh.
During my time there, my first clinical rotation, we had what you would call a miracle cure of a 5-year-old boy using only a homeopathic remedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that experience led me to study homeopathy extensively at SC&M. I did 10 homeopathy shifts under Drs. Messer, Udell, and Oskin, and I received a phenomenal education, a phenomenal homeopathic education. Understanding the Organon beginner's degree, you know, through that work, et cetera, understanding the concept of vital force and Hahnemann's concept of how, of why we get sick, right? I understood Hahnemann's concept, but like I say, nobody mentioned Lenoir. No other professors, no other clinical rotations. I mean, nobody was talking about those three legs of the stool and how they applied to anything that we were doing. And I remember the last week of class, you know, at that time you came back to talk with the graduating class. The final week, you would come back. And, I mean, I remember how much I enjoyed the first week. And by the 4 years later when I was with you again for the last week, I didn't understand the last week, right? Because it didn't relate to anything that I had done in the clinic. Okay, because I was, by that time, I was much more versed in Hahnemann than I was in Lindlar, right, in homeopathy than naturopathy. And so then you fast forward. So I went into practice. I did. I had one horse pulling the cart, which was homeopathy. Okay, now I got good results because I had studied homeopathy extensively. But it's, you know, like you say, you might as well have all the horses pulling the cart, right?
Right. Right.
So, you know, I've been involved with Vital Conversation. I remember the first call you and Dr. Camp did. And then you said those three things. You restated the three legs of the stool on that first call. And that little memory bulb went off. And then the second call, you restated those three legs of the stool. Right? Lowered vitality, abnormal composition of the blood and lymph, accumulation of waste matter, morbid materials, and poison. Well, you know, I thought, okay, you know, the third call, you said it again. And so I said to myself, you know, he's not saying this for no reason, right? He keeps repeating this. He's intentionally repeating this. This is not by accident. And you mentioned the Catechism of Nature Cure. So I dusted off my Linlar that I diligently purchased the first week of class, right, for your initial course. And I found the chapter on Catechism of Nature Cure. And what do you know? Linlar presents us with a complete checklist, a repeatable process, that if we use his repeatable process with all of our patients, we will get amazing results, right? He makes it so easy. So this was the real light bulb, right? I mean, the little cogs and the mechanism clicked into place, and I suddenly realized, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a naturopath, right? And so I've shared this with you, and you and I thought it would be helpful if you and I come on the call today and just kind of walk through. This is in line with, as what Dr. Workin says, you taught her to think like a naturopath, right? And so me going back, you know, listening to you, going back to Catechism of Nature Cure, this is how you think like a naturopath. So we were thinking of the call today, going through and using Linlar's checklist. Okay, there's literally a checklist here. And if those of you listening, this is the time to go get your Nature Cure book, dust it off. If you're listening to the recording, pause the recording, get the book out, okay, because we're going to go through this checklist. Okay, so Jim, am I explaining the intention here correctly?
Yep, exactly. And so for those who are listening who let me just fill in a couple of blanks here, if you don't mind.
Yep.
What we're talking about specifically is in Linlar's Nature Cure. And by the way, I have to once again register my dismay at your experience in a naturopathic medical school with not a single mention of Linlar. Now, he is easily one of the giants clinically and politically, and I guess we could say historically, in natural medicine, Nature Cure specifically, having written the book called Nature Cure.
Right.
And is probably the most articulate, at least perhaps the most concise, in the presentation of the philosophical basis of vitalism or a vitalistic approach to medicine. In his chapter 4, I believe it is, the chapter which is what I just pulled it out myself right now. It's the chapter that's entitled, What is Life? And he starts out by saying that in a study of the cause and character of disease, we must endeavor to begin at the beginning, and that is life itself. For the processes of health, disease, and cure are manifestations of that which we call life, or vitality, life's elements. While endeavoring to fathom the mystery of life, we soon realize that we are dealing with an ultimate which no human mind is capable of solving or explaining. We can only study and understand life in its manifestations, not in its origin or its real essence. Then he goes on to say there are two prevalent but widely differing conceptions of the nature of life or vital force, the material and the vital. And then he goes on to explain the dichotomy between those two different ways of looking at life, or in this case, its manifestations, which are disease and cure. As he goes through this, he goes through a catechism, which we're going to look at today, and explains this in detail. And again, my dismay at learning that, at least in your education, this man and his work was never mentioned again, nor was it articulated as the basis for, or at least a way to approach clinical practice. So, a catechism, of course, is a list of questions and answers. And after he goes through his catechism, where he talks about or introduces these ideas, he asks, what is nature cure, and what is a constructive principle in nature? What is the destructive principle in nature? What is normal and what is natural? And then the meatier part of it, as far as I'm concerned, is what is health? And health, of course, is a natural, normal. I mean, health is a normal, harmonious vibration of the elements and forces composing the human entity on the physical, mental, and moral planes of being. Note that definition, by the way. He's saying it's normal, harmonious vibration. This is before the Beach Boys, folks. Good vibrations, right? Health is normal and harmonious vibration, the elements and forces composing the human entity on the physical, mental, and moral planes of being, in conformity with the constructive principle in nature applied to individual life. Then he asks the question, what is disease? And it's just the opposite of that. Disease is the abnormal or inharmonious vibration of the elements and forces composing a human entity, et cetera, et cetera. What is the primary cause of disease? The primary cause of disease, barring accidental or surgical injury to the organism, is the violation of nature's laws. And then this gets us to the point where we want to jump off today, which is, and then what are the effects of the violation of nature's laws on the physical human organism? Now, notice that he says he doesn't use the word disease. He says, what are the effects of the violation of nature's laws on the physical human organism? The effects of the violation of nature's laws on the physical human organism are lowered vitality, abnormal composition of the blood and the lymph, and accumulation of waste matter, morbid materials, and poisons. These conditions are identical with disease because they tend to lower, hinder, or inhibit normal function, and because they engender and promote the destruction of living tissue. So again, the effects of the violation of nature's laws on the physical human organism are lowered vitality, abnormal composition of the blood and the lymph, and the accumulation of waste matter, morbid materials, and poisons. And what Dr. Cesar is referring to is in my course, what I would have said about this is, and this being an introductory course to students in a naturopathic medical school in the first week of class, the very first class that they had, after going through these three points, I would often say this: if you learn nothing else in the next 4 years, learn this. Because those are the three legs of the stool upon which our medicine is based. And what I mean by that is that we are told later in the catechism that the methods of treatment that are in conformity with the constructive principle in nature, or the treatments, the methods of treatment that are in conformity with supporting vital force, with that constructive flow in the organizational or reordering, as Hahnemann and Kent would say, in reestablishing order, among the treatments that are in conformity with that principle are the corollary to the three of those, which is to economize the vital force, to build up the blood on a natural basis, that is, to supply the blood with its natural constituents in the right proportion, and to promote the elimination of wastes, poisons, and the accumulated toxins. So that's what we're referring to. And so, sorry for running off with that there, but I just want to bring people up to speed. And so, how did understanding that get you to where you were in the way that it changed your practice?
So, you know, I think the genius of Lindlar here, what Lindlar is laying out is, like I say, it's a repeatable process. Okay. So I want to bring in a little bit of Hahnemann from the Organon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because
mm-hmm.
if we're going to be talking about vital force and vitality, I want to make sure that we're really using those terms. A lot of times in our profession, right, sometimes we confuse vitality with vital force. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
if you don't mind, I'm going to bring in a little bit from the Organon here so that we set the stage. And then I'd like to go through what I do now, right? I apply Lindlar's checklist, all right?
Before you do that, I just want to make one other observation. One other observation. There are critics of what we are talking about at the Institute who I have heard it said is we're being a little cultish in that we're, you know, relying on Lindlar and we're following Lindlar. Well, I have two or three things to say about that, but two main things. One is that the truth is the truth. That is to say, principles are principles that don't change. They don't change through time. They don't change with cultures. They don't change with science. They don't change. Principles are principles. They can be understood in a different way. We can have new information through our scientific inquiry that might shed more light on these principles, but the principles don't change. And so in that sense, they're actually timeless. And one of the reasons that we use Lindlar is because he was as articulate as he was. However, Lindlar and Hahnemann and Kent are not, they are people that we quote all the time because they have the most articulate presentation in a cogent way. However, everything that we're talking about here is consistent with the other writers in natural medicine, nature cure, naturopathy from the beginning of the organization of this understanding as a profession. And this includes Spittler in basic naturopathy, includes Wendell in standardized naturopathy. It includes all of the authors and writers that are quoted in Susanna Sharenko's books, published at National College in the Hebert series about the history of naturopathic medicine, the philosophy of naturopathic medicine and vaccinations, and on and on and on. The hundreds of people who are quoted in those presentations, those books, are all on the same page that we're talking about right now. So this is not relying on one or two writers or one or two individuals. It's sort of relying on people who have summarized it for us, but it's widely articulated throughout the profession, and even before the organization of the profession. Think Hippocrates, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. So that's it. Let's hear what the Organon has to say.
So, you know, Hahnemann has the concept, he lays out this concept of the vital force, right? This is the organizing principle or energy of the body, right? There is obviously an organizing energy to the body that animates it, right? Coordinates the activity of 30 to 40 trillion cells into organs, organ systems, the body as a whole, our mental, emotional, right? I mean, there's clearly an organizing energy to the body, and he calls that the vital force, right? We have used that terminology as well in naturopathy. Then we have the concept of vitality, okay? And again, I just want to make sure that everybody's clear on terms here, because a lot of times we interchange these terms, and they're actually different. So Hahnemann says that we get sick because the vital force becomes untuned, okay? It becomes out of balance, right? It gets, instead of vibrating or resonating in balance, it gets untuned, knocked out. It gets knocked out of tune by stressors on the physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual aspects of our being, right? Now, if there is vitality in the vital force, that means the vital force is, if you will, maybe strong enough to withstand the stressor. And it will remain vibrating and resonating and staying in balance. If the vitality of the vital force is lowered, then we become susceptible to these stressors. So Hahnemann in the Organon articulates this susceptibility that we have, right? And we can see this every day. Some people, right? Pasteur said this, right? The germ has to grow in a susceptible host, right? And so the lack of vitality in the vital force is what makes us susceptible to getting untuned, okay? And so, like I said, I just want to set that, because a lot of times we flip-flop those terms, and they're really two different things. And Lindlar references vitality in the catechism, okay? So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page of what vitality means. It does not mean vital force. Okay, and so that distinction, I think, is going to become even clearer when we go through this catechism. So if you, you know, as Dr. Sensenig, he went through the preliminary questions of the catechism. Okay, now, if you go to question 15, what are the methods of treatment? Okay, what do you do? How do you approach a case? How do you get people well? Okay, so you know they're sick when you see those three things. When you see abnormal composition of the blood and lymph, when you see accumulation of waste matter, when you see lowered vitality, when you see the what we call disease is an expression of those three things. So if somebody is sick, if somebody has a disease, the body is struggling under those three things, those three conditions. How do you correct that? So he very helpfully lists the six steps that you need to do to correct that. Okay? And so this is what I'm saying. Lindlar provides us with a checklist. I mean, you cannot imagine me turning to this page and seeing that there's a checklist for me to follow. I mean, how much easier could somebody make this for us? Okay? So what's the checklist? Okay, so first of all, we see the opposite of what disease is. Okay, so we have to build up the blood on a natural basis. We have to promote the elimination of waste material and poisons. And we have to, Lindlar calls it, economize vital force. Okay, now, so these are the opposites of disease, right? So we know what disease is. We can see the steps here. We know we're going to be doing these three things. And this is what Dr. Sensenig says on every call. He's not saying that for no reason, right? So those three pieces have to be there, okay? Now, there's three other pieces that our Lindlar tells us we have to do too, right? We have to establish normal surroundings and natural habits. We have to correct mechanical lesions. And then, this is the one that I just love, arouse the individual to the highest possible degree to the consciousness of personal responsibility and the necessity of intelligent personal effort and self-help. Okay, so, let's go through these, okay? So number one, establish normal surroundings with natural habits in accordance with nature's laws. So this is where we're taking a look at people's habits of life, right? This is what Lindlar tells us to do. Establish normal surroundings and natural habits of life. And so you interviewed Dr. Louise Edwards last year, and she shared her concept of the determinants of health, right? So, and she even gave us a handout on it, right? So much of what is included in those determinants of health, right? Those are normal surroundings and natural habits, right? Our sleep habits, how we relate to things, right? Are we relating to our family members, our coworkers, our friends? Do we have good habituated coping mechanisms and things like that? All of these sort of lifestyle habits that we look at, right? Are you going to bed at 2 a.m. and waking up at 5 a.m.? Well, we got a problem here, right? So when
I was going to say, I'm just being facetious here. The patient who does that, who says, can you give me something for that? I'm tired all the time. Can you give me something for that?
Right.
I go to bed at 2 and get up. Okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, so when you approach your case, right? So for students that are listening, When you go into your clinical rotation tomorrow, when you're studying your cases tonight for your clinical rotations tomorrow, use this checklist. Have I done a sufficient intake with the patient to determine where are their abnormal surroundings and where are their unnatural habits of life? And figure out, right, do an assessment. What do we got out of line here? Okay, what can I do to bring this person back into line with those natural habits? I'm gonna skip what he lists as number two for now. I'm gonna go in a little bit different order. So build up the blood on a natural basis. That is, supply the blood with its natural constituents in right proportions. Right. So this corresponds to abnormal composition of the blood and lymph. So, he didn't know the genius of Lindlar. Right. Is they didn't even know, I mean, I think he wrote this before vitamin C was discovered.
Right.
But he knew that there were constituents, right, in the blood that were required for life. We have defined many of those. There's no doubt in my mind that we have not yet defined or discovered all of the nutritional cofactors and, vitamins, et cetera, right? So what we're looking at is getting, if you will, the nutrients into the blood. Right, normal composition of the blood. Do we have the nutrients on board? Do we have, are we lacking on thyroid hormone? Are there hormone deficiencies? Is what is supposed to be in the blood, is it in the blood? All right. First of all, we got to get whatever we're going to get into the body, we got to get through the gut. So this is why we're famous for working on the gut, right? The working on the digestive tract is a means to an end, right? So now when you start thinking about, okay, what do we need in the blood that's not there? How am I going to get it in the blood? I got to get it through the gut. Is there a dysfunction in the gut? Oh, wait a minute. She's got chronic heartburn. She's been on Prilosec for 2 decades. I've got a problem here, right? when you go through a pathology textbook, when you go through your physiology textbook, what physiology, what known physiology of the body supports getting nutrients into the blood? What pathologies impact getting nutrients into the blood, right? Do you see how we can even apply this checklist to our study of physiology, biochemistry, pathology? Everything starts to revolve around these principles. That's the genius of what he's laying out here. So it's not about treating the heartburn, right? Correcting the heartburn is a means to the end of getting the nutrients into the blood, restoring the normal composition of the blood. When I realized what he was laying out here, it made me look at my biochemistry and my physiology and my pathology totally differently. Because now it wasn't just, you know, okay, that's interesting information, but now I could see that all of those things were a means to an end. I knew what the end was. I knew what the goal was. Okay? It's not just correcting heartburn because it hurts. We got to correct the heartburn so that the stomach functions normally so that we can digest our food so we can get the nutrients into the body. Number four, promote the elimination of waste material and poisons. Okay, so again, what are we famous for? Detox, right? So this corresponds to accumulation of waste matter, morbid materials, and poisons, right? We got to get them out. So what are some pathologies that would impair someone's ability to remove toxins? What are some herbs that I can use to do that, right? So, again, when I'm approaching my case, I go through this as a checklist. All right, what toxins have they been exposed to? Are they eating something that's generating toxins? That's why we do the Carol test, right? A Carol test is a means to this end, because if you're eating food you're intolerant to, it creates toxemia, right? So can you see, again, I want everybody to make this connection to the pathology textbook, the physiology textbook, the biochemistry textbook. Those are all means to this end.
Can I add just a couple of thoughts?
Yeah,
can I add a
go
couple
ahead.
Thoughts there?
Yeah, I hope I'm explaining this clearly.
Well, just this, two things. A comment by Dr. Louise Edwards has been, what could be more scientific than basing what we do on the basic sciences, which you're alluding to here? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, and this is my sort of facetious side comment, you're referencing the study of each of the basic sciences and how they would be illuminated, you might say, or how our studies might be illuminated by these principles. Wouldn't you think that a naturopathic medical school curriculum would do just that? That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I mean, again, for the students listening to the call, as you're studying, right? Okay, now I'm in pharmacology class. Well, what impact do these drugs have on depleting nutrients from the body? How are these drugs cleared, right? What pathways are utilized to clear these drugs, right? You want to... Right? This is why we learn all of this, because it's a means to these ends. And that's why I never understood what the ends were. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to go to, you know, Lindlar says economize the vital force. Okay? That corresponds to lowered vitality. Okay? So economize vital force, I you know, forgive me, but I think he means economize vitality or build up vitality, right,
mm-hmm.
so that the vital force is strong enough to withstand stressors, right? We have to have the vitality in the organism so that we have the resiliency. The vital force is resilient in the face of the inevitable stressors that we're going to encounter in our lives, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
How do we build vitality, right? So this is where we have constitutional hydrotherapy, other hydrotherapy techniques. We have mental emotional work, right? Many modalities to economize vitality. Homeopathy, right, is stimulatory to the vital force, right? So homeopathy is going to work on this level too, right? Things like acupuncture, right? Your various energy medicine modalities, right? So again, I'm using this as a checklist. Have I checked the boxes as I'm approaching my case, right? My treatment plan, Linlar says, check these boxes. So my treatment plan should be checking these boxes. Number five, correct mechanical lesions. Okay, so you've done a lot of training on this within the Institute, Dr. Sensenig, right? This is an area of expertise that you have. When you and I were talking before, you believe that anybody that's sick is going to have some mechanical lesion that's impacting, right? That has to be corrected, right? So then you're doing physical medicine, right? You're correcting those mechanical lesions. So again, you look at the anatomy textbook. Okay, you look at the pathology textbook. How would this disease or how does the anatomy, how would that impact a mechanical lesion? How would that generate a mechanical lesion? How would I correct that, right? And then number six, arouse the individual to the highest possible degree of consciousness of personal responsibility, right? This, again, this is something that we're known for as well, right? Motivating, right? It's not just you go into a naturopath and you just get a pill like you go into a conventional doctor and you just get a pill and you take it, right? We are working all the time to motivate and educate and instill. This is doctor as teacher, right? All of these things that we put our heart and soul into of making people realize that they are actually in control of their health, right, and how they feel. So what changed for me was instead of thinking about what do I do for heartburn, right, this is where we get confused. We're looking for protocols, right? So instead of me thinking about what's the protocol for X, right? Okay, I have this person in front of me. Let me go down the checklist. Where are they at with this checklist? Well, okay, is there anything that would prevent them from getting the normal constituents of the blood to the blood? Well, they have heartburn. That's going to be a big barrier for them. That's got to be overcome. What are they eating? Are they eating any nutrients? Right? Let's take a look at that. We know the modalities, we know the physiology, the biochemistry, the pathology, the anatomy, we know all of that. No one really told me you just fit all of those pieces that we learned into this checklist, if I'm explaining that clearly, right? So and I think when we discuss our cases, right, when we post in Vital Conversation and say, I need help on such and such, I think we should say, for this case, what I've done to establish normal surroundings is work on their bedtime. What I've done to economize vitality, restore vitality, we're doing constitutional hydrotherapy. What I've been doing for building up the blood is this. Where I'm stuck is elimination of waste material. I've tried X, Y, and Z, and they're super sensitive to everything that I've tried. I can't get any leverage in this area, right? Mm-hmm. We should be posing our clinical questions. Here's the six pieces of the checklist. I'm struggling with this piece, or I don't know where to start. Can somebody help me fill in something in each of these six areas? When at our conferences, when we're presenting our cases, and I think this is where people like myself that didn't understand this get confused when people go over their cases. Because it's like, well, I had a 31-year-old female with XYZ, and I did this, and I did this, and I did this, and they got better.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the protocol for XYZ, right? It's kind of like, okay, what happened here? What we should be doing when we present our cases is we should be saying, I have 31-year-old female, chief concern XYZ. Here's my 6 checklist items. This is what I did in every checklist, in every mm-hmm. piece of the checklist, right?
Right, right.
Because, and you've had this conversation on some of these calls, Dr. Sensenig. You know, people have said, well, what do I do for detox? And you're like, well, you could do a lot of stuff.
mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how many things are there to help eliminate morbid matter and waste material? Right? There's
right.
tons and tons of options.
Well,
that's where the art is. Right? The art is
right.
determining what you're going to do for this individual person. The repeatable process, right, is knowing that for each person you're going to do that with.
So the part of what you're one of the aspects of what you're saying, I put it that way, is this little soundbite we use all the time where we treat people, not diseases. And this
mm-hmm.
is exactly what you're talking about. We don't have a protocol for heartburn. We don't have a protocol for migraines. We have a method or a way or a, to use your term, the checklist of the aspects of the individual that need to be addressed in order to return someone to health. And in doing so, we're eliminating the symptoms because they're the manifestation of the disturbance or the stressor in the individual. And I think, you know, to just go on with what you're saying, one of the reasons we're having this conversation is to emphasize for ourselves and for those listening that, one, you have to chunk down the... I think the conversation we had is for someone to understand how something is done by the folks who have been doing it for a while, whether it's medicine or law or physics or flying a plane or, you know, parachuting or any other human activity, there are people who just do it because they've done it for so long they don't have to think about what they're doing anymore. But the beauty of what you're emphasizing here is that it's all based on these simple ideas. And the thing that you and I have been throwing around is this idea of that you, Dr. Caesar, have brought up, is that you don't sit down and start writing Shakespeare. You learn to read and write by learning about certain words, and then you put them together. And then you learn that you need a verb and you need a noun and so on and so forth. You start with see, spot, run. See, spot, run. And what we have here is build up the blood on a natural basis, eliminate the waste, and economize the vital force. Or as I like to say in the vernacular, give the body what it needs to function properly, take out the garbage, and stimulate or engage the vital force or the vitality.
Right.
And so what we're talking about here is see, spot, run. And I think this is actually a very important observation. When so-and-so stands up, when Dr. Zeff or Dr. Dick Kronberg or Dr. Workin or anyone else, Dr. Louise Edwards, Dr. Dan Young, when any of these people stand up at our conferences and say, I did this for this, what they're really saying is, this is what I did to build up the blood or to provide the nutrients. This is what I did to deal with elimination. This is what I, of waste. This is what I did to establish normal surroundings. But we're not using that language, and it would serve us all in clinical practice and in teaching each other and in learning to categorize, I think, see, spot, run. See, spot, run. And go back there all the time until we're all on the same page.
Yeah. The exactly what you said, the expert does these 6 steps that Linlar gives us without
uh-huh.
even thinking about it. And
uh-huh.
are there modalities that touch more than one of these 6 checkboxes? Of course, right? But for somebody like me that left school an expert in homeopathy and not knowing what naturopathy was,
mm-hmm.
I needed these six steps. Okay? And I, so what I did was I sat down and I just sort of brainstormed. Okay, what are some bad habits that I need to be looking out for? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What would drain someone's vitality? Made a little, I need to be on the lookout for those. What would prevent people from getting the nutrients into the blood? Your diet, your digestion, health of the blood overall. I just started writing down a whole bunch of situations that would impact that. What would
uh-huh.
cause someone to have an accumulation of toxins? Well, exposures, drug history, you know, different medications that they've taken in the past, right? Impaired pathways, sluggish organs, right? If you're listening to this call and you're new to this, just start brainstorming. Take these six pieces and start brainstorming. What am I looking out for in my patient that would indicate that we've got an issue in these six areas that need to be addressed? What modalities particularly resonate with these six these six steps? Right? Okay.
Right.
Well, milk thistle, that helps detoxification, right? I fully believe that any naturopathic student out there today, if they are armed with the basic sciences and our modality toolkit, right, our therapeutic toolkit, and these six steps, even the newest naturopathic student can heal the sick because they can figure out something to do in all these six steps.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean,
check the box.
Uh-huh. Check these six boxes with at least one thing and watch the miracle happen. Uh-huh. Literally. So I would love for the students listening to this call to go into your rotations tomorrow and present your cases to your supervising physicians and saying, okay, well, Linlar, according to Linlar, we got to do these six things. And here's what I'm going to do for each of these six things. Right? That's the revolution that we need to take place in our schools. I have a dream of having a clinic shift one day myself. This is exactly what I will expect my students to present to me as a case analysis. Right? Okay, here's the six checkboxes. What physiology is at play impacting these six checkboxes for this patient? What biochemical processes are at play affecting these six checkboxes? What pathology is affecting these six checkboxes? What modalities do you want to use within each of these six checkboxes to address those things?
Mm-hmm.
How, right? There's your treatment plan, right? When you get overwhelmed, how am I going to approach this case, right? Linlar gave us step-by-step exactly what to do.
So, I have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, I want to make this observation from the divided legacy, the history of, I'll get this right, divided legacy, a history of the schism of thought in medicine, or Harris Coulter's landmark book on the history of medicine and the dichotomy between the vitalist and the mechanist way of approaching the human body. And in his introduction to Volume 1, he says, after a fairly lengthy introduction, not that every practitioner of medicine falls into one or the other tradition. The run-of-the-mill physician concerns himself essentially with the technical problems of applying therapeutic rules to his patient. He does not question the postulates and the assumptions behind the rules because he is not aware of them. But the greatest thinkers of all fall on one end of the spectrum of the thought. They're great thinkers precisely because they have examined the underlying assumptions and on them have erected a coherent body of doctrine. In other words, just what it says. The run-of-the-mill physician doesn't question the underlying assumptions. And it's the great thinkers, and in my opinion, and yours as well, I think, if I can say this, is that the success that we can see in restoring health in patients is based on this cogent
rational approach to addressing those things which we know are synonymous with disease and turning that around. Now, there are some people who are listening who are wanting to ask this question, I'm sure, so I want to ask those of you. How does this relate, or does it, to what we call the therapeutic order, and which is taught in most of our schools now?
Well, it's a very good question. Now, when I was at SC&M, to my knowledge, the only doctor that used the therapeutic order was Dr. Mittman. He had a clinical rotation while I was there. I did serve on his clinical rotation, and he did reference that. But during my time at SC&M, there was no other clinical rotation that referenced the therapeutic order. So, I mean, I was aware of that, right? But I, you know, I can only comment as perhaps a novice to the therapeutic order. But for me, the therapeutic order, you kind of apply that to your overall plan, right? You still have to check these six boxes, but maybe within, one of the check boxes, you need to use a little bit more, higher up on that therapeutic order. And another checkbox, you might be doing a little bit lower down on the therapeutic order. Okay, that's how I view the therapeutic order. It impacts sort of that arch, right? The science is the six steps. The science is the repeatable six steps that Lindlar lays out for us. The art is kind of knowing, this person's a little sensitive, I'm going to go with this, right? Or, this person had, it's damp heat, so I'm going to go with this. Leveraging that therapeutic order, that's where the art comes in, right? Am I going to do something lower down or higher up on that therapeutic order? All of those decisions, that's the art, right? And so we become more and more sophisticated as we gain more and more experience in doing this. But anybody that's gone through a naturopathic medical education and spent the hours that we do learning the basic sciences, our therapeutic toolkit, put one of those in each box, and that's a good start. You're going to have more of an impact than any other healthcare provider they've ever worked with, even if you're a novice, because these are the six things that you have to do. Mm-hmm. Functional medicine, they're doing two of the four.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I love it when people have already tried functional medicine. And they come to me, I tell them exactly why they haven't healed. There's no healing in functional medicine. Right? The healing comes when we bring the vitality back to the vital force, and the vital force becomes tuned again. That's the healing. And that's part of the six steps here. And functional medicine doesn't do that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're,
right.
The genius of lust was to unite all of, he had a vision to unite all of these vitalistic practitioners, right, so that we would have a unified toolkit. We would have the complete toolkit. And that's what we have, that no other, quote-unquote, natural medicine profession has. We have the complete toolkit. We have something that we can put in all six of these boxes. That's where power comes from.
So if we were taking, that's an incredible way to think about it. And, I've been fond of saying, and I think you're saying this in a slightly different way, that if people understood the immense potential of naturopathic medicine, they would rarely have to resort to allopathic intervention. Not to say that's good or bad, but one would rarely have to go to symptom suppression and the treatment of disease in the mechanistic way if the full potential were understood. And it's by applying these this checklist that you're talking about that one reaches that, or potentially reaches that, outcome. It's like, to quote you again, first it's see, spot, run. And then eventually it's Shakespeare. But you have to start with see, spot, run.
Yeah, I had to start with C-Spot Run. And C-Spot Run is reading this checklist and going, okay, I'm going to go through these six things, and I'm going to put something in each box, and I'm going to give it to the patient, right?
Right.
And the Shakespeare is the level that you're operating at, right? You don't even, you know, it's just coming to you. You're not thinking of the six boxes. You're just doing, right, the whole thing. But you know what? I didn't get that education. This is where I'm starting out. I have a repeatable checklist, right? And I work that checklist every single time. And it's changed my practice. It's changed my life. It's changed my marketing, right? Now, because the big, and unfortunately I have an appointment here, but I just want to leave this. Because now when people come to me and they've already gone to the chiropractor, the acupuncturist, the functional med doctor, all of these other things that are quote-unquote natural medicine, they're wondering, how can I help them? Well, I walk them through these six steps. And I say, oh, well, nobody worked on it. You know, nobody worked on the vital force. Nobody, right? They half-heartedly cleared toxins. Nobody told you you need to go to bed at 10 p.m. instead of 2 a.m., right? I can tell them exactly why they haven't gotten results. And they go, wow, okay. If that's it, let's do this, right? So it has allowed me to distinguish myself from every other practitioner that they've ever gone to, because only we have the complete toolkit for each of these six boxes, right? Chiropractors correct mechanical lesions, number five, and they do a few supplements. I mean, I'm not trying to be down on chiropractors. These comments should not be published, you know, outside of this call, right? But we have a complete toolkit. Acupuncturists, they work on the vitality level, the energetic level. Okay, that's one of the six, okay? We work on all six. That's why since I started doing this, I was happy with what I was doing before. Homeopathy is very powerful, but I had one out of six things in place. Are you kidding me?
Correct.
So, so this is. I'm so sorry. I have to jump off. I have another appointment here, but I just I hope I explained this clearly to everybody.
I know you have to. I know you have to go. And so just to make one other comment here. The homeopathy by itself is out of context. Correcting mechanical lesions by itself is out of context, if this is the context, right? You put those things all together, and then you have the six horses that are pulling the wagon, as Lindlar would say. Why not use them all? So I guess, first of all, thank you very much. I know you have to run. Thanks for being with me today and having this discussion. And I think I'm going to be a little cute here and summarize what we're saying as this. You start with see, spot, run, and you are moving towards to be or not to be.
Right. But, you know, see, spot, run is so amazingly powerful, right? Just like I say, I fully believe, you know, a lot of students and new docs believe, you know, they have a little insecurity, right? Natural insecurity. Mm-hmm. If you do something in each of these six steps, you unlock the miraculous ability of the body to restore itself to health, right? It's all laid out for us. So get to work, everybody. Start brainstorming. What are the pathologies that impact these six things? What are the mental setups that impact these six things? What are the modalities that impact these six steps, right? Start going through your data that you've learned and start kind of chunking them into these six steps. So when you're working on a case, you have something to reference. You have some go-tos, right? And as you start applying this, you're going to start just expanding your understanding of how to use our modalities, how the anatomy impacts, the pathology impacts, all how the sciences impact these things. But get to work, start building up some items in these six areas so that you have them ready to go for your next case, your next follow-up. That's all I got.
Okay. Okay. Thank you again so much. And, boy, I have a lot of other questions, but we'll save them for another time.
As per usual with these calls, right?
Yeah, right, right. Have a great day,
thank
and thanks
so
again for joining me. Okay.
Thank you.